War Room Impeachment with Stephen K. Bannon, Jason Miller, and Raheem Kassam. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome to War Room Impeachment. This is episode 81. We're doing an evening special tonight. There's so much going on in the nation's capital about the impeachment of Donald J. Trump. Yesterday was I-Day. This is I-Day plus one. We're here live on Capitol Hill, just literally yards away from the nation's capital where this historic event went down yesterday. We're on live on the John Frederick Radio Network. We're on the Salem Radio Network nationwide. We're on AmericasVoice.net, both across the country and throughout the world on that live streaming service, and also on Newsmax TV, now passing 70 million homes. Raheem Kassam and Jason Miller are on assignment, out hunting down stories that we're going to be breaking tomorrow on the morning show at 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. And then again, we're going to have another special tomorrow to wrap up the week, an historic week here in Washington, D.C. Remember, we started the show back on October, I think 20th. We talked about that, you know, as sure as the turning of the earth, Nancy Pelosi was going to bring a couple of articles of impeachment against Donald Trump, and she forced it through the system. A quick march, or the president describes it as a suicide march that will leave an eternal mark on the Democratic Party and the people who participated in it. But it was definitely a forced march. They worked weekends. They were working late at night to get it through the Judiciary Committee, or get it from Intelligence Committee to the Judiciary Committee to the Rules Committee to the entire House to be voted on yesterday after 8 or 9 hours of debate. It is 19 December, the year of our Lord, 2019, and this is the 21st anniversary of the impeachment of William Jefferson Clinton. In fact, that would go down in the early evening hours. In fact, we're just about, I think, pretty close. There was an evening that they voted on it, and President Clinton at the time heard about it. This is episode 81. I'm joined by Jack Maxey, who ran our War Room in the 2018 midterms as we fought to hold the House, made a film called Trump at War, and then took it throughout the nation. And particularly in those 30 battleground districts, actually we went to 40. Last night, the vote in the House reflected the victory in the House of Representatives by the Democrats. You know, elections have consequences, and we certainly had a big consequence last night. You lose the House of Representatives, Nancy Pelosi, from day one. They ran on it. I mean, not in those 30 districts. They said never mention impeachment. These were, you know, candidates who were auditioned. You know, they had veterans, they had combat veterans, they had former CIA case officers, really a select crew that ran in those districts. Never mentioned the I word, never mentioned impeachment. Just talk about health care, talk about the economy, talk about national security. And what do? They focus an entire year on impeachment and investigations of the president. Now that the investigation is over, now that the forced march is over, now the suicide march is over, they got plenty of time not to send this to the Senate. Nancy Pelosi, in a power move last night, and really stepped on her impeachment victory, because it was a victory for her, talked about, well, she may send it over when she can guarantee a fair trial. So she's trying to use her leverage. Greg Manns, Jack Maxey, Greg ran communications for the Trump 2016 campaign in Pennsylvania. Remember, you win Pennsylvania, you're president of the United States. You don't win Pennsylvania, you get a set of steak knives. Which Hillary Clinton did. Let's go to, we got a bunch of stuff we got to cover. I want to cover first, guys, these are the guys running the rapid response in the War Room, the mechanics of it. Want to talk about this Nancy Pelosi, what's happening, how she's positioned. We got a lot of stuff to talk about USMCA and all the work that was done today that's been put off for so long. But the first is what Nancy Pelosi, this power move between Mitch McConnell, the president. This is about short trial, no witnesses, longer trial, witnesses. Nancy Pelosi's holding it up until she thinks it's going to get a fair trial. But I want to go, there's been some confusion, I think, today on Congressman Clyburn's statement. So, Greg, why don't we play Congressman Clyburn first?
Okay.
Sure. How long are you willing to wait?
As long as it takes. Even if he doesn't come around to committing to a fair trial, keep those articles here, so keep it as long as it takes. If you know, and he's told you what he's going to do, it's almost like, let's give him a fair trial and hang him. I mean, it's the verse of that.
As long as it takes, are you willing to hold? How long are you?
Okay, I think the confusion there. He's saying, and this is, and he's one of the you know, the original major chairman in the House. The guy's got a lot of power, and obviously with South Carolina having a primary in the Democratic primary, I mean, you know, when he Congressman Clyburn backed Barack Obama against the Clintons, who he'd had a relationship for many, many years, that was a big deal. This is a power player in the House. The most important thing, he says, hey, however long it takes, it takes. So Nancy Pelosi has consolidated the Democrats, even from taking some heat. And Jason Miller said today in the morning that it was, you know, that she was getting some grief from the media. But as far as her chairman backing her up in the her caucus backing her up, it looks like, and you see his attitude, hey, it takes her however long it takes. She's got unity, correct?
Absolutely. I mean, I think they have no choice when you think about what they've done. They really have their backs against the wall, so they're either going to stand together or fall one by one.
The confusion in conservative media was about his comment, hey, give him a fair trial and hang him. That's an old saying. He said it's the reverse. I don't think a lot of people caught. It was a little under his breath, but he said it's the reverse of that.
Exactly. It's at the end of the clip there where the confusion comes into play.
Well, and I think what Clyburn's saying is the reverse of that in that the Republicans are saying, hey, we're going to give him a quick trial and acquitting, and we don't want that. And so this throwdown now is coming between. And people were shocked at this, but as we said during the other episodes of War Room Impeachment, and that's what you're listening to and watching live right now here from Capitol Hill, is that this is the first time it's been a split House. You know, before when Andrew Johnson was impeached, the Republicans controlled the House and the Senate. When Clinton was impeached, they controlled the House and the Senate. So this is a very different situation where you have two separate parties. Let's go. We do have some. We have Nancy Pelosi and her. She came up today and had her throwdown.
Yes, during Nancy Pelosi's morning press conference.
And then the next step, the whatever you want to call it, the trial. That is where you put the managers. I was not prepared to put the managers and that bill yet because we don't know the arena that we are in. Frankly, I don't care what the Republicans say. Any other questions? Not on this.
That's pretty in your face, right? I don't care what the Republicans have to say?
Frankly, I don't care what the Republicans say.
Now, McCarthy got on her because she didn't take a lot of questions, right? She had this kind of throwdown. That was her response. Didn't want to take any other questions about this, right?
She was pretty much silent, and then she went into talking about all the things that they were going to do for America, the typical pablum that we get from her when she seems to be confused. But I think that Senator McConnell has a great answer to her. He says, listen, you want a bipartisan rules? Why don't we just use the same exact rules that we used for Bill Clinton that were voted on 100-0? And that was when they controlled the Senate.
And that would be the managers, which are really the managers present the prosecution case from curated testimony. There are no new witnesses. You read essentially depositions or witnesses' testimony, and then the defense does the same thing, but you can't bring in any new information. It's what really came out of the House, I believe, correct?
Well, there were provisions inside those rules that would allow for you to call witnesses, provided you could get 51 votes in the Senate.
Exactly. You had to, after you presented those, they saw where they were, voted, and I think in that time they agreed to have two or three additional witnesses for each side. That trial took, what, 5 or 6 weeks, right? It went from early January to mid-February.
Right.
So Lindsey Graham, so right now there's the bid and the ask, and we really don't know what her ask is. She's just saying she wants to see what fairness is, and she wants to see details of what Schumer and McConnell come up with. You know, we've had people on the show in the last couple of weeks, particularly Bill McGinley, who talked about this. He was there back in the 90s. He said they got along so much better in the 90s. You could work out these accommodations, particularly in the Senate. Now he thought it'd be very tough even to get to the rules because Schumer and McConnell are not exactly particularly close. Let's go to, we've got Lindsey Graham. Let's go to Lindsey Graham.
Here's Lindsey Graham.
I don't want to speak for the president, but if there's a witness request by the president, I'm going to say no. If there's a witness request by anybody, I'm going to say no. I want this to end quickly. I'm going to make my decision based on the trial record established in the House.
This is, you know, I think the president's going to be looking for exoneration, right? This is just a truncated, very tight, acquittal process. I don't know if the president's going to be happy with that, but it sounds like Lindsey Graham's made up his mind.
Well, it makes you wonder, why does Lindsey want to run it out so quickly? And I think perhaps it's because, he may be tied up in all this thing. He went on a trip with Yovanovitch and McCain back in late December, early January 2016, 2017, where, frankly, Senator McCain talked a lot of smack about the new president, and both he and Lindsey and Yovanovitch just sat back and listened.
Do you think he may have his reason may be that he thinks the thing could get too messy, witnesses haven't been vetted, and so if you're going to get people to talk about, to support the president's, that this was a perfect call and talk about some of the surveillance that went on, talk about the Ukraine situation, bring up things that Rudy wants to bring up, that you'd have to trade that off with bringing up members of his staff, and that Graham may say, hey, look, this thing's going to get so messy, this trial could take 2, 3, 4 months, I'd rather just cut it off, take 2 to 4 weeks, get it done and move on. Do you think that's his bigger concern, or the fact that he may have been on a trip?
Well, I think his biggest concern is to try and get it done quickly. I mean, the rules mean that the Senate has to deal with impeachment solely for until they get a ruling, conviction or acquittal. So I think that there's a lot of work that needs to be done for the American people. We've already had a significant delay. And I think that
how do they justify, Greg, jump in here, how did they justify and how the media is handling it today, this forced march? I mean, she went to the microphones and she bigfooted the president of the United States at the UN. He gave one of the finest defenses, I think, obviously the finest ever been done at the United Nations. He gave that speech on nationalism. And, you could see heads blowing up in the audience. It was a fantastic speech. She had to bigfoot that. She came in and bigfooted it that afternoon and said, hey, we're opening up a formal inquiry. We're opening up an inquiry. And from that time, I think that was September 24th, she had, 4 weeks of unlimited shots on goal. But it was a forced march every day. I mean, they were doing the Star Chamber right away in the House Intel. They went to the Judiciary Committee with the public testimony, with the professors. Then they go to rules. Then they jam it through last night. And it's only going to be 8 hours of debate. Not even every member got to come up, I don't believe, and speak their piece. Having jammed it through like that, and Mitch McConnell comes out today, and he was not shy by saying this was a shabby process. You've essentially, dumping this thing on here that's really ill-formed. How does she do that? And then how do you justify, even with some of the media saying, as Jason Miller said today, throwing the red flag, how do you justify that?
Yeah, I think the Senate has to give the president a chance to really go up against Nancy Pelosi. It's a clash of titans, and he deserves to be vindicated and exonerated, and that has to happen with in-person witnesses.
Then why do you think Lindsey Graham, who's been, Lindsey Graham sometimes plays both sides, but he's been more of a Trump supporter, right, particularly in some tough situations than not. Why is Lindsey Graham, let's play that clip again. I think people got to hear it because it's about as in-your-face as possible, and it's really in your face, I think, a little bit to President Trump to say, hey, don't come back to me with a fantasy list that's got 50 guys on there, including the Bidens.
All right, here's Lindsey Graham again.
I don't want to speak for the president, but if there's a witness request by the president, I'm going to say no. If there's a witness request by anybody, I'm going to say no. I want this to end quickly. I'm going to make my decision based on the trial record established in the House.
But, McConnell said there wasn't really a trial record set in the House. It was too shabby. And he does. And when he says he doesn't want to speak for the president, he is speaking for this. I don't want to speak for the president, but if there's a witness list, the answer is no.
Forcefully says no.
Forcefully says no. Not a maybe, not I'm going to review it, and I'm going to go off the trial record. Mitch McConnell just said, and lighten up Nancy Pelosi, you've delivered me something that's shabby, right? He had a lot of criticism for it, right? Slipshod, right? Slapdash, right? It was, slapped together. And so you can't, how do you use that to go off the trial record?
Yeah, and I think the other thing that Mitch McConnell did today was he kind of called out Nancy Pelosi for getting cold feet. That was an interesting specific quote that was taken, that Politico picked up on. And I think that's exactly the way that the Senate should be playing it, kind of saying, hey, do you have cold feet? Are you fully invested in this? Or do you want to bring it over and see what we can do?
I'd like to hear, you know, Senator Graham is a guy that I think supported the president a lot more than he's been, you know, equivocated. He is a believer, though, and a strong believer in the John McCain school of, you know, he's a neocon, right? You know, he was over in Egypt with the Muslim Brotherhood, giving the press conferences with McCain. He was, you know, associated with McCain about the Ukraine early on, as Senator McCain was very supportive of the EU's policy here and NATO's policy also. But I'd like to have some more justification than, hey, if you send me a witness list, I'm going to say no. I think the president ought to have some latitude here for what the president would like to see. He's the one that needs to get exonerated.
Yeah, he's the one that's on trial.
He's on trial, and he's not looking for an acquittal. He's looking for exoneration.
And also, you have to remember, the difference between this and Clinton was that we had thousands of pages of depositions and the entire Starr investigation. So this was all entered into the record. All we have now are
a grand jury record, too. I mean, yeah. Clinton lied to a grand jury. That was the whole issue, right?
Right.
I mean, a federal grand jury. This was very different. How do you see this thing playing out over the next couple of days? We're going to get to, in fact, let's pull in here. They've passed USMCA. They're working. Is the continuing resolution passed right now? It passed the Senate, I think, didn't it? So the continuing resolution, they're getting all their business done. I want to bring on briefly. It was the anniversary, first year anniversary the other day, which we mentioned, of the guys on We Build the Wall that have been down there building the wall. I think it's $1.5 billion to be used at the president's discretion to build a wall on the southern border. But we've got Brian Colfage is out working today trying to get his new wall down there in the Rio Grande Valley. But I've got Foreman Mike, who's become an internet meme or an internet star. Foreman Mike, are you with us?
Yes, Steve, I am. Good afternoon.
Hey, brother, tell us, you know, it's a one-year anniversary. We Build the Wall. You guys are focused on augmenting the president's program. I know you've been looking at this budget. The new continuing resolution, I think it's got $1.5 billion. But, you know, part of what the president's trying to do is hung up in the federal courts. You get fits and starts. Tommy Fisher, our guy, got a $400 million contract down in Yuma. Jan Brewer, the governor of Arizona, former governor, was just on the show the other day, and she said, hey, that Yuma area is the most important area we're going to be building in. We're glad Tommy got that contract. Former Mike, I know you've been down outside of McAllen, Texas, on actually the Rio Grande River. Can you just give people an update? We can't get Brian on because he's out busy today, but you've been really the internet star. I know Brian's not jealous, but you've become an internet star with your videos you made of building the wall in El Paso. Where do we stand on actually securing the southern border, and particularly the wall down there we're trying to build privately to help the president, things the Army Corps of Engineers won't take off? Can you give us an update?
Well, we've got on the 3.5 mile project, we're on project two. Obviously, you know, we've got some court proceedings going on, and we're going to proceed with construction again on January 4th. On projects 3, 4, and 5 through 8, we're currently in negotiations right now, but you've got a major situation down here. The Corps of Engineers is running all over the place, but nothing's getting done. They're being held up. All the contracts that are being awarded are being blocked or sued in federal court for whatever reason. And it's become a real problem. Additionally, on top of that, a lot of the ranch owners and farmers along the border are they're extremely upset. If they have a 600-acre ranch and it gets split in half because a wall is going a mile off of the Rio Grande River, they're basically getting their property ceded back to Mexico via the new wall that's supposed to be in place. It's a real mess. Ranchers and landowners and property owners along the border are very upset.
Listen, yesterday in the impeachment day, Foreman Mike, one of the congressmen stood up and said, look, the reason they're doing this, the reason this whole sham process is here is not about the Ukraine. They hate Trump for the following reasons. And the second reason he listed, that he's building a wall on the southern border and he's trying to take over the cartels and he's trying to stop mass illegal immigration. this is what you've dedicated your life the last couple of years. You know, it's 1 year that we've been with partnered up with Brian Kofage. You've been doing this for a while. Can you tell the people why is it so important? You've spent a year of your life down there from El Paso, Texas to Laredo, Texas, now to the Rio Grande Valley. You've been down in Arizona with us. Why, when a congressman says, hey, the Democrats hate him because he's trying to build a wall, why is it for people who haven't been down there, why is this wall so important, and why do you think the Democratic left hate Trump for trying to build it?
President Trump is doing a magnificent job being a regular guy, a boots-on-the-ground guy. I have to get up at 5 in the morning and go to work like most Americans. A lot of the people don't understand. We have a severe problem not only with the cartels, but every country on the planet is allowed to have a wall to protect themselves. And let me tell you, I cannot explain to the American people. It is too graphic. I just can't explain it. The enemy is at the gate. And when I say the enemy is at the gate, Steve, I'm not just talking about the cartels. The country of Mexico has no rule over the cartel at all. Out of the 35 Mexican states, 22 are run by the cartels. And I'm going to tell you something. I'm on the border. I'm literally 3 miles from the border right now. I am with ranchers and property owners, and I hear the gunfire. And when I say gunfire, Steve, I'm not talking about a couple of rednecks shooting shotguns. I know the difference between a 50 caliber and an M60. And when I hear U.S.-made 60 caliber machine guns firing within a mile of the U.S. border, that's a major problem. The other thing that people have to know is that we have, when you're the cartel and you have money, you can buy the best of the worst. So we not only have Chinese, we have Russians, we have Somalis. The people of America have to understand ISIS is crossing our southern border to get into the United States. We're not at war with China. We have an economic problem with China. But why are Chinese nationals coming across the border? Why are the Congolese getting dropped off at the southernmost tip in Mexico and getting marched up through the United States and pouring across this border? This is a very, very bad situation, and the people of the United States have to know this.
Hey, Mike, I want to thank you. I know you're down there active. We build the wall. We're going to send everybody to the site, and this is going to be up on War Room Impeachment today. You're an American hero, and we're going to start linking to some of your videos. I know they've gone viral as people have watched you down there with Brian Kofage, the most decorated veteran in Air Force history. Build the wall. We build the wall. It's the first year anniversary when the budget thing got stopped last year. Okay, we're going to take a short commercial break. We're going to return War with Impeachment.
War Room Impeachment. Here's your host, Stephen K. Bannon.
Welcome back to War Room Impeachment. We're live here on Capitol Hill. It's episode 81. You're listening to John Frederick's Radio Network, Salem Radio Network throughout the country, AmericasVoice.news throughout the nation and the world. It's a streaming service, and of course, Newsmax TV. Here with Jack Maxey, who ran the War Room for us in the 18 midterm, and Greg Manns, who was the communications director of the Trump 2016 in the key state of Pennsylvania. It's the day after impeachment day. There's been a lot of small unit rear guard action combat today to decide how this impeachment is now going to go to trial in the United States Senate. But today was the day after they put off everything to focus on this forced march through the Christmas holidays to impeach the president. They finally got some work done today. Let's get the punch list of this is everything they pushed off. And remember, there was an analysis done. I think it's cost the American, not consumer, but the American worker, $62 billion in wages and goods and production over the last year in USMCA. I saw that number. I think Raheem pulled it up. But what else did they accomplish today, Greg? Today was to jam everything through so they go home for the Christmas holidays.
Yeah, so one of the key things that they got done today is USMCA, which passed 385-41 in the House.
Okay. Now, the problem is that they've said they're bracketing that. You know, Jason and I had a disagreement. I thought it should go to the Senate right away. It is now, we know that Toomey in Pennsylvania opposes this. It's not going to, they want to put it on the other side of the trial, but now they're not even going to get the trial delivered to them until They're not even going to get it delivered to them until at least early January. Don't know how long this thing can last. I think it's a 30-day time fuse on this from the House to the Senate. You know, they're going to have to reorganize that. I think they're going to have to deal with USMCA as soon as they get back. What else did we get done today?
So over in the Senate, we had 12 more judicial nominees confirmed. That's a dozen in the past 2 days.
Well, 2 days? I thought we had 13 yesterday and 12 today.
Yeah. Oh, two dozen, sorry.
Yeah, so we got like 25 done in the 25 judges in the last 2 days. Yep. That's a great.
Yeah.
What about the CR? Is that done now?
That CR is done. The other thing that they did in the House today was trying to vote for the Restoring Tax Fairness for States and Localities Act, which is basically an attempt to give a gift to the blue states like California and New York.
This is to take away salt, I think.
Increase the limit
salt,
now.
Take the salt out of the wounds of the...
Right, it's 10,000 right now, but they want to make it unlimited.
We just had former Mike on from The Wall, and we can tell you down there, it is a mess. I mean, with the cartels and what's happening down there. They've chop-blocked President Trump in every way. Federal courts are involved in this. We're being held up, and Tommy Fisher's being held up by a butterfly preserve, and a lot of these things are these environmental, ecological preserves are just started up to make sure that you can't build a wall. So it's been I think there's $1.5 billion in the CR to actually build, and I think it's his discretion. It could be replacement wall or new wall, and that's going to be wanted. Now, Jack, you've been making a thing all day and talking about this as you're in the rapid response in the war room. You think Nancy Pelosi looks particularly nervous after a day of a big victory, and you think it's something different than just this handling of how she's going to handle the quote-unquote fairness of the trial, where it's going to go. What's your thesis here?
Well, I think that Nancy Pelosi, just like you've always said, I think she's a very strong leader, and I just don't see it in her today. She looks unnerved. She's seen that way for the last week or so, and I think she's watching.
You thought she was unnerved yesterday in the impeachment day? I didn't get. How did you say she was unnerved? She's given her caucus stink eye when they start clapping, right? She didn't want. She wanted this to be very somber. She wore the Black Widow outfit.
Well, I think she gave them stink eye because she knew just how important this was.
I got that, but that's not looking weak. I mean, I just said, where did you see weakness yesterday?
Yesterday, I didn't see weakness. This morning, I saw a lot of weakness. I saw someone who was not on her game, and I think partially, that's because her polling numbers are just collapsing.
What do you say that? That's a big...
Zogby came out with a poll this morning in which they asked the question, do you think the Democrats care more about impeaching the president than they do about passing legislation that benefits the American people? Every single demographic was above 50%. In fact, the only ones that were in the 50s were 18, 29, 54, Hispanics 56, African Americans 61, men 69, women 65.
Hold it! Come back to me on this. What? Walk me through those numbers. Those are compelling. I haven't seen this poll yet.
So the numbers overall: men 69, women 65%, young people 54.
These are people that think that the Democrats are more focused on impeaching President Trump than doing things that help them.
Exactly right. And the buried
lead. That's the question.
The buried lead in this whole thing, 53% of Democrats feel the same way.
So you believe that this is the warning shot that people have seen this now. They wanted more support as they went on national TV. You think it may be going the other direction?
Oh, I think absolutely.
And then how did she get her? Scared. How did she get her whole caucus, particularly the Dirty 30, all signed up?
She wields a lot of power. She has for a while. And she's raised a lot of money for them as well. And
out in Silicon Valley, she was the expert. She's the first one that knocked it. She understood 30 years ago the Silicon Valley could be a cash machine for progressive Democrats. And that her rise to power is because she knew how to raise money from the four horsemen. They used to call them was the underwriters. The investment banks out in San Francisco, she knew how to shake those guys down. And then she started shaking down the principals, and she became one of the top fundraisers. And that's what her rise to power is inextricably linked with her ability to bring cash.
Yeah, exactly. And you saw in the two committees between intelligence and judiciary, being from Pennsylvania, I was noticing some of those members. So Madeline Dean and Mary Gay Scanlon, those are her cohort rising stars. And even though she said she didn't really whip votes, I've got a sense that those two.
Her lieutenants whip
yes,
votes.
Yes, right. Exactly. Exactly.
Well, talking about whipping votes, what happened to the congressman down at Cape May in Jersey? Where was he today?
He was at the White House declaring.
Is that odd? Is that odd that a Democratic congressman would go to the White House on the day after an impeachment vote?
Well, he's now a Republican.
That's official. He announced this today. How did that go down?
Well, he got a letter sent to him by the Democratic caucus saying that he is officially kicked out and to be determined what's going to happen to his office.
So they put the first shot in. It was I think it was smart that he stuck around for the vote as a Democrat, right? To show that there was a lack of unity in there. Do you think the polling now, what they've come out and trashed him, said, hey, the guy couldn't win a Democratic primary because he's kind of been a little bit pro-Trump up until then. You think that was just sour grapes?
Yeah, so the interesting part, he's very close with the establishment Democrats in New Jersey.
Jeff Andrew. Right.
The establishment Democratic machine in New Jersey. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out between the local county chairs in that South Jersey district and the power brokers in Trenton, Newark, and even to an extent New York City that wield their power in New Jersey politics.
Before we get to Mark Meadows, we had one other thing on our punch list I wanted to go through after the poll. Oh, stocks. The record, we had record in the equity markets today. I know you're a finance guy, Jack. What happened today?
Well, the S&P 500, NASDAQ clinched closing records.
Jack, it's called a microphone.
That's right. You know, I'm not the brightest guy in the room.
I didn't want to say that, but you're working in the war room. You know that.
No, looks like we're having record close again today, and I think that the markets are just shrugging off this impeachment.
Well, analysts are saying that the impeachment, they don't think Trump's going to be removed. They don't think it's going to ding him up. They particularly don't think it's going to hurt him in 2020.
Well, if they're looking at the same polls that the Democrats are looking at, that's probably the case. And, you know, I think that...
Is this the reason they went after Trump? Is this the reason they came at him? Because they understand if you do... Working class last night in middle class in Battle Creek, Michigan, where you had him lit up for 2 hours and that thing rocked. And the way he could talk to people that does not have a political vernacular and hits it. And then he understands the Wall Street aspect of this. You know, the S&P, the Dow, all of them are on fire because of his policies. Is that a pincer move that they can't fit? That's why they've got to have this impeachment. They got to figure out. They can't beat him at the ballot box. They can't beat him in the hearts of the people. They can't beat him on policy. They can't beat him on Wall Street. They got to figure out how to beat him.
Well, you know, I mean, Trump keeps saying over the last month or so, read the transcript. And every day I hear the talking heads on CNN and everywhere else say that we have him dead to rights, that it's so obvious that he's done something wrong. But I think the American people are just like anybody else. They don't see it. We talked to some Europeans who walked through here, and they don't even understand what we're doing here. They think it's a farce.
Total sham.
Yeah.
They can't understand it.
Yeah, the America First agenda, all the policies are firing on all cylinders.
And you think that that's what they feel? He's an existential threat. They got to take him out. That's why they did this force march.
Yep, exactly.
So in that regard, if you felt that, wouldn't you want to have a full trial and exonerate him in a trial and vindicate him at the ballot box in November? But don't you have to have the exoneration to get to the vindication? If you believe that, doesn't the president come and say, hey, Lindsey, I appreciate you want to look at the trial record? That's not really a trial record. That was a smear record, right? And what I don't want is I don't want Adam, you know, the president calls him Shifty Shift, right? I don't want Shifty on global TV for 4 days. You know, I went to warroom.org. I saw Raheem's 7,000 pages that you curated. I don't want Adam Schiff reading in his voice, right? I have to look at him for 4 days while he's reading depositions of all the unelected bureaucrats that you know, gave me the interagency consensus. I don't even have the interagency consensus, you know, read to me. I already rejected that in trying to do the America First. Wouldn't you want a real trial?
Yeah, and I think there's a unique dynamic as well for the U.S. Senate being the most deliberative body in the world. They don't want it to be a knockdown, drag out fight and demean the institution that is the U.S. Senate.
You think they're afraid this could become a circus?
Yes.
They saw some of you don't know if they want, they're not into guys like Matt Gaetz going down to the skiff and saying, and bringing TV cameras and pizza and ordering pizzas and saying this thing is a joke. That's not the way they roll?
No, it's more of the highbrow deliberative.
Is President Trump going to be able to force that? Aren't we going to roll the way he wants to roll if he wants to get vindication, if he wants to be proven innocent? Not an acquittal of not guilty?
Yeah, getting the killers in there and defending him to the full extent of the law that proved that nothing was wrong. The call was perfect.
Speaking of a guy, we first did the show. The very first guest we had on here was Mark Meadows. And we had Mark Meadows on because he had been sitting in as oversight member into these hearings. And he said, I've sat through all the hearings. You know, I've sat through all these depositions. There's nothing here that the president shouldn't be embarrassed about. There's nothing here wrong. This is all going to play up. Now, Mark Meadows announced today that he's not going to seek a re-election. How is that played out today in the media?
So there's some speculation that he might leave early, maybe something in the administration. Nothing really has been firmed up on that. But he did say that he's going to be a strong ally of the president one way or another. If that's in the administration, outside, he's going to have his back.
Well, look, he's one of the strongest guys we got. He chaired the Freedom Caucus. More importantly, what people forget, he's the guy that blew up John Boehner. I mean, it was his, putting in that request or whatever he put in before the recess, I think in 14, that blew up John Boehner as Speaker of the House. I mean, he threw down a challenge. That's why the establishment Republicans hated this guy, you know, more than anything. But he has been a tremendous, tremendous, tremendous ally to the president. And he's, hopefully something that will come up. Maybe it's inside the White House. Maybe it's in the administration. You know, maybe it's somewhere else on the campaign or whatever. But this is one of the best guys. Is that a negative signal for what people, particularly guys like him, think about retaking the House when you see guys like Mark Meadows decide to pack it in?
Well, one of the things I've said for a long time, and Steve, you and I saw this last year, a lot of people are retiring, but I think it's incumbent upon them to make sure that some other Republican fills their jersey. And I think Meadows could be a tremendous asset for the Republican Party to go on the road. He's in a district where we're likely to get another Republican.
I think Trump won it by 16 points.
You know, having him out at rallies with Trump for the next 9 months would not be
well.
A bad
he's
thing.
Also somebody who ought to be on media all the time. I mean,
absolutely.
He's one of the best, and he's not afraid to go and entangle with the CNNs, the MSNBCs, to go be interviewed by the Washington Post. I mean, a lot of our best people sometimes just want to go on Fox, which is fantastic. You got to get to the base. You got to come on shows like this. You got to go talk to conservative media. But what we need is people that don't mind going into the lion's den of CNN and MSNBC and being interviewed by the New York Times. We had Gillian Tett from the Financial Times of London. I know a lot of our listeners' heads blew up because she doesn't want exactly, you know, she's not exactly America Firster, right? Or a populist working for the Financial Times. Okay, I want to talk about the witness protection program. That would be the Democratic primary. This thing's gotten so low energy, so sleepy. They're having a debate tonight. Where's the debate taking place? And it is going to take place. It got over the union issues. I know it was Loyola. It was at UCLA first, I think. Got shifted to Loyola Marymount, which was over in my kind of side of town. It's by the beaches. The Democratic primary is going to take place tonight. And one person is not going to be there is Tulsi Gabbard. What kind of grief did she get today? She did a present. And she got called out for not having, being a profile, no profile in courage. However, it's pretty much a profile in courage when you're running in a Democratic primary and you say you're not going to impeach Trump. And people have already criticized her for being too close to the Trump movement. And when Drudge used to do the polls, which he didn't do on the last one, Tulsi would always get 40-45% of every poll. What kind of grief did she get today?
AOC took a pretty direct swipe at her today. So I think it's interesting that they had AOC being the person out there drawing that contrast and basically saying
maybe it's because I said I'm an AOC fan and I'm an AOC type fan. I want more bartenders. We want you talk about recruiting candidates. I want fewer lawyers, more bartenders, right? But she took the show. What was her shot at her today?
Basically saying you've got to have guts to make hard choices when you're in the United States.
So she called out a Army major who's had a couple of tours. She called her out for lacking guts.
Yep.
How do you think that sits?
At their base, probably pretty good. That's where they're drifting. They like the fact that
they like the squad. They like the squad over. I noticed that Tulsi gets very little love when she's up there on the debate stage. What is this going to show tonight? Now they've had the impeachment. Before, when they started the formal inquiry in the impeachment, they had the dinner out in Iowa, which is used to be the Jefferson Jackson. Of course, Jackson, since President Trump hung the portrait in the Oval Office, they took Jackson off the thing. It's called like the Liberty and Freedom Dinner now. But on that one, I think only Bernie talked about impeachment. I don't think anybody else mentioned impeachment that night. It was really the kickoff to this thing. Do you think tonight, as people watch this, whoever does watch it, because it's been getting terrible ratings, as President Trump tells us, do you think that there'll be, they will go over the impeachment and particularly talk about the trial?
I think there'll be one or two lines in the opening statements, basically saying that the House was doing their job, they're obligated to do it, but then we'll reverse back to their talking points.
Do you think that this is, as you see this field, and you see the lack of energy in this field, and you see the numbers like Elizabeth Warren, and I think her number's coming down for the same reason the Labor Party is. I think working class people in the Labor Party, if you look at those focus groups, they were talking about how are you going to pay for all of these programs of Corbyn? Not that just don't dislike him personally. How are you going to pay for this? You're seeing since Warren, she's the white paper person, as she's come out with more granularity and detail, particularly on healthcare, her numbers are starting to come back. Do you think this field is so critically weak because their first thing is electability? Remember, they believe orange man bad, right? Their number one thing is electability. They have to remove Donald Trump or they don't want another 2 days. They had 25 judges because you're deconstructing the administrative state. You're changing the federal judiciary. If he gets reelected in November, you're going to have a complete revamp of lifetime appointments in the federal bench. And so you're going to probably have, I don't know, seven people on the Supreme Court if you look at the age of some of these folks. So they got to remove him. Does this field strike you as groups that can do it? And does that reinforce the meme that they did this forced march to try to harm him so much that someone like a Cory Booker or someone like a Mayor Pete or Klobuchar could actually take him on?
Yeah, look no further than Michael Bloomberg getting to the race. That's a specific data point that you can point to that there's nobody in that current field before Bloomberg got in that can beat President Trump. Bloomberg thinks he can. I don't. But
why don't you?
Because
do you think he'd win the nomination?
No, absolutely not.
Why? Because he happens to be a moderate Republican?
Yeah, because he's in this Democratic primary, he's an extreme Republican. So
yeah, because they're getting pulled so far left. The poll that came out this morning, though, shows, 28% for Biden. Bernie's at 21. Elizabeth Warren's, I think, in the mid to high teens. But it looks to me that shows broker convention. And that's why a Bloomberg can come in. And I think he's down in the low to mid single digits. But he has spent, I think, $100 million so far. And he's got what he's worth. Somebody said the other day, the company's worth $58 billion. He may be worth $40 or $50 billion. He could put $2.5 billion into a primary, particularly on Super Tuesday, where you're going for those big states. I mean, quantity has a quality all its own when you talk about his capital, right?
Yeah, Tom Steyer, who's a billionaire, it's been reported that Michael Bloomberg will surpass Tom Steyer's entire net worth.
Well, and Tom Steyer, and what he'll spend.
What he'll spend.
He's a billionaire, and he'll spend more than a billionaire's entire net worth.
Yes.
Steyer spent $81 million, as Raheem pulled out the other day, and is only at a couple of percentage points, right?
Yes, exactly.
So can the Democratic primary actually be bought, do you think? Or is it you really have to go out and show your mettle?
I don't think it can be bought. I mean, I think part of the problem is that they've taken such a negative view of the billionaire class. You know, you've got Elizabeth Warren saying that nobody should be a billionaire. So how do they then elect a billionaire? I just think it's going to be very problematic. And I just want to make one comment on the phrase you used about quantity being a quality of itself. Was that, did you quote Stalin?
They say it's Stalin. I don't know. It's always been a great quote. It's just, they say I'm a Leninist anyway when I give Stalin a hat tip. But no, quantity does have a quality all its own, particularly talking to capital. Remember, Donald Trump would not be impeached if he had not won those seats. And it was Bloomberg's $100 million, I believe, it was critical. I mean, those guys will tell you we focused on 25 and got 23. So, they're very focused on the fact that they know how to apply capital, smartly and smarter than guys like Tom Steyer and other people. So, and they've got an apparatus. Okay, warroom.org. You guys are here 24 hours a day. You're running a team with Rapid Response, putting stuff up. How do we get to the website? What are we going to see when we get there?
Warroom.org. We've got all the show clips, a newsroom, audio, and links to the podcast. When you do download the podcast, please leave a comment And
remember, the podcast is free. Everything's free here. So just go leave a review, leave a comment. If you go to any of the news stories, leave comments. We're trying to build a community here to make sure that everybody understands what's going on. The intensity factor is only going to step up on every day during the holidays. The intensity factor, the trial of the century, is going to start sometime in early to mid-January. And we're going to get you totally prepped up on that, on War Room Impeachment. This is episode 81. It's a special live episode we're doing at the end of the day. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. We're going to do another wrap-up episode to wrap up the week tomorrow at 5. Greg Manns, Jack Maxey, thank you very much. Fantastic. I want to thank the John Fredericks Radio Network, Salem Radio Network, America's Voice.News, and, of course, Newsmax TV. Until tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., Stephen K. Bannon, War Room, Impeachment.